And good morning again. While council are getting reset, I'm just going to announce again for the record that it's June 6, 2024. And we're about to hear the second of three cases on our oral argument calendar here at the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Welcome, council. My name is Kayala Eid. I'm serving as presiding judge today. I'm joined by Chief Judge Susan Siegel and Judge Jeannie Cochran. A couple housekeeping matters. As I know council are well aware, you can use the button on the front of the podium to move it up and down. There's only one recording to be made officially of this proceeding. That will be available later today or tomorrow on the website. There's no recording of the streaming proceedings. Failure to comply could subject you to sanction or contempt proceedings before the court. Council, you'll have 15 minutes for your opening argument and 5 minutes for rebuttal for the appellant, Mr. Butler, and Mr. Magnuson, you'll have 15 minutes as respondent. Can you please just confirm I've identified you correctly for the record when you start, and Mr. Butler, when you're ready to proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Benjamin Butler. I'm an assistant state public defender. I'm accompanied today by certified student attorney Sam Beisman, and we represent the appellant Anthony Poyer. Trial is not a game of gotcha, but that's what happened to Mr. Poyer in this case. This court must reverse his conviction because the district court violated Mr. Poyer's due process rights when it allowed the state to amend the complaint and literally, almost literally, pull the rug out from underneath the defense on the second day of jury selection and when the court denied Mr. Poyer's mistrial motion, like to start with the complaint issue, due process issue. This case had been pending for 2 years, and during 2 years, the state made a simple allegation that Mr. Poyer had twice committed an offense on or about June 1st, 2016. Now, the on or about language there matters, and defense counsel acknowledged that he knew that there was some time gap between the two alleged offenses. But on or about June 6, 2016 is how defense counsel planned the entire defense.
So and the record counsel, in. Counsel, but wouldn't you agree that the complaint had a time frame, which was, I believe, June 1st through August 31st?
It did, Your Honor. And so that did factor in, and counsel acknowledged that that factored into the defense. But the complaint was, or the defense and the complaint were centered around, revolved around June 1st, 2016, because that's what the state alleged. And the record in this case is sort of oddly developed as to how this amendment that expanded the date range both backwards and forwards, and I think that's also important, how that affected defense counsel's plan, because defense counsel said, I mean, literally, he said, I have 69 questions prepared for the complaining witness based on an allegation that this happened on or about June 1st. He had questions prepared for every witness. He had defense witnesses ready to testify about June 1st, 2016.
With the fact that the district court judge, at least it appears the district court judge, would have granted a couple of days. Well, I don't know, a couple of days, but asked, if you know, let me know if you need time.
I'd like to clarify the record on that a little bit, Your Honor, because I do think it's important. Defense counsel told the judge on April 12th, which is when the judge granted the motion, which was, again, the second day of jury selection, not the first day of jury selection, but the second day, that he would need at least a full day to redo the defense, which would be the next day, April 13th. And what the judge said, and this is on page 8 of our addendum, is, quote, I'll consider providing a break, end quote. I'll consider providing a break. Not a continuance, not a full day, but I'll consider providing a break. And then, on April 12th, no break happened.
Defense counsel asked for a break?
Counsel didn't, on the record, ask for an additional break, but counsel had already told the judge what he needed. Counsel had already objected to the amendment, and the judge had already said, well, I'll think about it. So I don't think it's on defense counsel to then again say, hey, what about that break you've already talked about? The prejudice is the defense has been completely upended at that point. And again, we know that not because the clever appellate lawyer said so, looking at a cold record, but because the trial lawyer sitting there with the case in front of him told the judge this.
What do we make of the honor about language? I mean, just hypothetically, would your argument have the same force if the date range of the amendment were June 15th, 2016,
yeah,
or sometime in May 2016? I mean, what are the parameters of the prejudice you're asking us to find here?
I think that gets to the before and after part, Your Honor, and that's a good question. The state said that this complaint was amended because of a new statement made by the complainant 2 weeks before the trial, which, again, they had it for 2 weeks. They didn't amend the complaint for 2 weeks. They waited until the second day of jury selection. But then what the complainant said in that statement was what she had previously said is that these acts happened during the summer. And that's where June 1st, and then as Judge Cochran said, it does, you know, refer to through August of 2016. So that'd be the summer. In the new statement, the complainant said, actually, it happened during the school year. And at least one of the incidents happened during the school year. And she remembered because she said in the new statement that she had gotten on the school bus to go to school the next day, which was completely different than what she said earlier. So the new statement and the amended date range, which goes all the way back to September 2015, covers the new statement's allegations, whereas the charged offense, the original complaint, does not. And so if the jury had been instructed on the original complaint to say the state must prove that these acts happened in Cook County on or about June 1st, 2016, or even on or about June 1st to August 31st, 2016, that, at least potentially, would not have covered the and that was her testimony as well, the first alleged act. And of course, whatever, maybe there was school on June 1st, we don't know. But the point is, the jury could very likely have a reasonable doubt over whether at least that first alleged act happened during the original time period. And I think that's what defense counsel is talking about when he says, I have 69 questions prepared for the complaining witness about June 1st, 2016, because obviously one defense here is nothing happened. Neither of these things happened. But when the complaint alleges that date range, a sort of fallback defense very easily is whatever happened here, they didn't prove that it happened during that date range. And that is something the government has to prove in a criminal case in Minnesota. It is not a quote-unquote element of the offense, as in if you look at the statutory language of second-degree criminal sexual conduct, the only thing they have to prove is that the complainant was under 13. I agree with that. But in every trial in Minnesota, including this one, the jury is instructed that they have to consider whether the state proved that the charged offense happened in the county, which was Cook, on the specific day.
Or about the specific day. So
sure.
How do you respond to, you know, Becker's holding that the precise date is only an essential element of the crime,
yep,
where the act done is unlawful during certain seasons on certain days? I mean, say they hadn't amended and she had just given this conflicting statement in her testimony at trial, wouldn't they still be able to seek, because this isn't an act unlawful during certain season or on certain days? I mean, wouldn't, sure, they still be able to seek a verdict under that reasoning?
If that's what had happened, Your Honor, and the date range was June 1st through August, and the jury found the defendant guilty, I'd have a really hard time making a sufficiency of the evidence argument, because you view the evidence in the light most favorable to the verdict and you defer to the jury's fact-finding. That is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the possibility of prejudice from the amendment. And the possibility of prejudice...
When I read the transcript, there's... The prosecutor notes that they prepared a summary of the interview when this new information first came up, and that was shared 2 weeks before trial with defense counsel, and defense counsel acknowledges that's true. So reading this transcript as a whole, you know, defense counsel was aware of the information 2 weeks before but had prepared based on the June 1st date. The district court indicated that it would consider a break, and then defense counsel never
asked for that break, at least on the record. So help us understand how there was prejudice here when that information was known. Defense counsel could have asked, affirmatively requested the break after the court said it would consider it, but didn't. How did the district court then abuse its discretion in granting the amendment?
I have two answers. First, on the statement itself, the statement provided to defense counsel, in which the complainant said, actually, this happened during the school year, in the context of the original complaint, is exculpatory. So defense, because it is outside of the date range, or at least arguably outside of the date range of the original complaint.
Don't we need to find then that the time is, how do we square that with Becker again? If the time is not an essential element of this crime, how is it exculpatory if it's always charged as on or about in this kind of circumstance?
Because on or about isn't unlimited. On or about is exactly what it says. If I say something happened on or about June 1st, 2016, if it happened in September 2015, that's not on or about under any definition of that word, which is what the amended complaint charged. The amended complaint went all the way back to September of 2015 to try to cover the new allegation. So when defense counsel gets that statement, I think that the implication is he should be on notice that, like, the state is going to change the alleged date of offense, which,
well,
A,
isn't that a possibility under the rules, under Rule 3.04?
There's always a possibility, Your Honor, but the complaint is supposed to, the point of the charging document is to give the defense notice of what it has to defend against. And the charging document doesn't always have to, and this is to Judge Eade's point, doesn't always have to say a specific day or a specific or a narrow date range. I agree with that. But this one did. And so when the government tells a person, you committed a crime between June 1st, 2016 and August 31st, 2016. If the defendant had come to court and said, that's vague, I don't know when I'm supposed to have done this, the court would say, nah, that's good enough. You're on notice. You're on notice of that range, because that's what the government is claiming. When the government then shows up and says, actually, it was at any time during the year between 2015 and 2016, that is a material change from something that the defense has been put on notice of. And when they give evidence, if the government in this case had said to the defense lawyer 2 weeks before trial, here's her new statement, and we're going to move to amend the complaint to deal with a new date range, we wouldn't be here with this argument. Because defense counsel then would be on notice as to what the government was going to do with that statement and would be on notice as to what it was going to allege, at least for 2 weeks. But here, they gave the statement. They didn't say anything about amending. The case then went to trial. They spent a whole day picking a jury. And only on the second day of picking that jury does this government say, oh, actually, we're going to do this.
So if I could interrupt just
sure,
a minute.
Sure, sorry.
So the original, it says offense date, you know, the original complaint was over the summer, June 1 through August 31. So in the victim's testimony, did she assert any times other than in that time frame? I mean, was there something that actually, you know, going to this mm-hmm. issue of prejudice,
sure.
was there new, like, no, this happened at a, you know, bathroom at a gas station in
right.
Wisconsin or something. I mean, something you would be totally unprepared for.
Nothing that dramatic, but the date really matters. What she said in her testimony was that she went to, was similar to her out-of-court statement, her second one, was that she went to school after the first incident. That is not something defense counsel, I mean, he's prepared, he knows she's going to say that because that's what she said the second time. But again, he can see that as essentially exculpatory, because if the jury is asked, did this happen on or about June 1st, and she went to school the next day, again, we're not talking about a sufficiency case. There is an argument he can make that whatever, if there was an incident, the first incident, it happened outside of the range that the jury is instructed that it has to find that the crime happened in. And this thing about whether that's an... So that's the prejudice, Your Honor. So the short answer to your question is yes. She did say something happened outside of the original date range. And This thing about...
Well, but that's surmising, right, that school was out of session by then.
She said something, let me clarify. She said something that the defense would have a very valid argument to the jury that there's a reasonable doubt over whether this happened from June 1st to August 31st. And that is a question the jury has to answer. Whether you call it an element or not, the jury is instructed, number four in those that list of things is, did the state prove it happened in Cook County on or about this date? And the jury's instructed that if you have a reasonable doubt as to whether that happened, you must find the defendant not guilty. And maybe we should change those pattern instructions to deal with these cases about it's not an element, but that's not how we do it. That's how we try cases here. And that's how this jury, this isn't something that like should have happened, that's exactly how this jury was instructed. They were instructed, if the state has to prove that it happened, except because of the amendment, it said September 15th, 2015, or September X, I'm missing the day, September 2015 to September 2016. So that eliminates defense, the argument that defense counsel had spent 2 years preparing for, which is, among other arguments, they can't prove that this happened during the time that the state says it happened. That's the only time the defense is given notice of for 2 years until the second day of trial. It's fundamentally unfair to eviscerate one of the planned defenses on the second day of jury selection when the defense has already told the judge he needs a full day to do it and he didn't get it.
Mr. Brother, can you remind me of your how to pronounce your client's last name?
Sure, it's Poyer, Your Honor.
Poyer?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for your argument. I neglected at the outset of the argument to actually formally call the case. And it is A23-1281, State of Minnesota versus Anthony N. Poyer. And so now that's on the record, rookie move on my part there. But thank you for your argument. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, my name is Peter Magnuson. I'm an assistant attorney general and I represent the respondent state of Minnesota. I agree that this is something of a gotcha case. It's a gotcha case by the defense, trial defense counsel, who gloms on to a couple of words in the state's complaint and then wants to use that as a grounds to prevent the state from amending the complaint after it had talked with their witness. First thing I want to, this claim that I have 69 questions lined up for the complainant. I struggle to see how that questioning would get past one. For example, CM, didn't you tell the investigator that you were assaulted on June 1st? No, I never said that. Where does the defense attorney go with that? The issue here is whether the complainant ever said that she was assaulted on June 1st, twice on June 1st. We know that she said no, they happened on separate dates. So for defense counsel to say I was going to center my case on somehow getting the defendant or the complainant to concede that this didn't happen on June 1st when she never alleged that both counts, both incidents occurred on June 1st. I don't know how you can plausibly say to trial counsel or to the trial court that I was basing my entire defense on this. Again, after the complainant says, no, I never said that, what are the other 68 follow-up questions that trial counsel was going to ask? There aren't any.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
I was going to say, can you shed any light as to why the state waited 2 weeks and until the end of the first day of jury selection to amend?
I don't know. That's not in the record why the the prosecutor stated why they didn't talk to her until 2 weeks before trial. But there was no explanation as to why they waited until that point in time. But again, the issue is here, Was it prejudicial?
So in that regard, though, the defense counsel did say that they would need to change their defense. Would you agree with that?
I agree that that's the statement, but I don't see how.
Well, accepting that statement for what it is and the fact that the amendment was made on the second day and could have been made earlier, why wasn't it an abuse of discretion for the district court to allow the amendment that late in the game?
Well, jeopardy had not attached, so these amendments are to be freely given, and there was an offer of additional time. It wasn't taken up by defense counsel. So,
but appellant argues that the district court was aware that there was a need for additional time but didn't provide that. Can you respond to that argument?
Well, again, I think there's a burden on the defense attorney to actually say how much time I need. I can give you some time, but there's never any say, well, I could use 2 days, and then the judge could respond, well, that's a little too much. But there was never, the trial counsel never put a time frame on it. So at that point, what is the judge supposed to do? Say, offer up things? The judge offered trial counsel an opportunity, and trial counsel didn't take the judge up on it. But actually, when you look at the cross-examination the trial counsel had for the victim in this case, it was quite extensive, as I point out. And actually, this new statement gave defense counsel the only impeachment evidence that they had. Prior to that, on this first complaint, there is no ability to impeach the complainant because she never said that she was assaulted twice on or about June 1st. But now that we have this new statement, now we do have inconsistencies. Now there is the ability to cross-examine the witness and to throw this to the jury and say, well, she's not exactly sure when these took place, so has the state met its burden beyond a reasonable doubt. So this amendment and this new statement that came in gave defense counsel the ammunition to undercut the complainant's credibility that prior to that time, it just simply didn't exist. So I don't see that there was any prejudice. Trial counsel did a fine job of cross-examining, as you would expect based on, they're very common cases, unfortunately. These are difficult to try because we never know exactly what the complainant is going to say, especially when we have minor victims. So there's an expectation that her testimony maybe could change. Here we have her story changed before she even took the stand. So now defense counsel has ammunition to cross-examine her and impeach her credibility.
But isn't it possible, and maybe this just didn't happen in this case, that with the narrower date range, however we look at it, the summer or on or about June 1, that defendant wasn't even in the state then, or that these other witnesses would say, yeah, I know for sure that he never slept over, that the kid never slept over at the house on those dates. But it seems like it's more than just the ability to cross-examine when you're talking about defense strategy.
Well, there was never an alibi defense raised in this case, and I'm unaware of any claim that he was out of the state during these time frames. Had there been evidence of that, presumably that would have been offered, but it wasn't offered at trial.
It was the statement was disclosed when it was provided. The new statement was disclosed. It's just that the amendment didn't occur.
Correct.
Right?
It was. We did prepare a summary of that interview, including that information, and we shared it immediately with Mr. Shaw. And then that's true, Judge. I'd acknowledge that. So it doesn't immediately, is that the same day, is it the next day? I don't think there's any dispute that it was on or about the very that day or the next day.
You would agree it would make sense to have made the amendment upon disclosing, I mean immediately upon receiving the statement. I mean,
yes.
Regardless of your position, I mean, you can give as much advance notice as possible.
Yes. Yes, I agree with that, that the prosecutor, it would have been a better practice for the prosecutor to immediately amend the complaint. But again, the issue is whether was defense counsel somehow prejudiced by this amendment? And it's an extremely difficult argument to make. How were you going to cross-examine this victim with the allegation of June 1st when she never made that allegation? In fact, it's clear from the probable cause, she says the second assault took place at perhaps 2 to 3 weeks later or longer. So, but both of these counts say June for honor about June 1st. So that to me is the gotcha. If defense counsel is going to say, well, I'm going to hang my hat on what is obviously an incorrect statement, and I'm going to go down swinging with that. I don't think that was a very good strategy, given that he was not going to be able to impeach the complainant. You're not going to put the person who drafted this complaint and signed it. They're not going to be on the stand presenting evidence against the defendant in this case. It's the complainant, CM. And nowhere that I'm aware of in the investigation is there anything where she said that one of these took place on or about June 1st, and clearly the second one did not take place on or about June 1st.
But so, what's the state's view of the outer bounds of on or about? Is there a limit? Could the state have proceeded even without the amendment, given the new information, and relied on Becker to say, well, it's not an essential element, it's charges on or about, as long as the actual facts are within the statute of limitations, there's no problem here.
Had that come out at trial?
Had it come out at trial. She testified consistent with her statement.
Yes, I would refer the court to Gertis versus State of Minnesota, 319 Northwest 2nd, 710. And this is on page 712, and that was referring to whether a date of when a person allegedly was in possession of a firearm. Here, the amendment only changed the date of the possession of the short-barreled shotgun from on or about August 25th to on or about July 15th. This did not change a single element of the crime to be proven other than the date of possession. Therefore, the matter of allowing amendments to complaints is in the sound discretion of the trial judge. Here, the judge did not abuse his discretion.
But I'm asking an absent amendment. I mean, could the state have just proceeded? Submitted the elements to the jury with both counts on or about June 1st, 2016, and just argued to the jury, this is what the evidence showed. These two things happen at two incidents, two assaults happen at different times. Or is there a boundary there? I mean, because your counterpart argues that on or about's not unlimited, and that, that's the problem.
But we have conflicting language in the complaint. We have offense date, on or about June 1st to August 31st. So there's an inherent discrepancy in the complaint right there. Appellant is hanging his hat on, well, we would have gone down swinging that the elements instructed to the jury would have been that this had to have been on or about June 1st. That would have been a determination for the judge to make when they were talking with the parties about the jury instructions. Clearly, the offense date, on or about June 1st to August 31st, even absent anything, I think that's certainly what the state would have been arguing would have been the order or the element that would have been charged to the jury. Defense counsel could have argued for something else, but I don't think there's certain.
What if the testimony at trial was that the alleged abuse occurred in April and the complaint hadn't been amended? Could the defendant have been convicted?
Well, that, I guess, that would depend on did the state ask to amend it after receiving this testimony? Under Gerdes, yes, the state could do that. So assuming that there was testimony that came in different, let's say that the complainant hadn't made that statement 2 weeks ahead of time, mm-hmm. and then makes it at trial. The state would have been within its rights under Gerdes to move to amend and expand the date range if the judge would have granted that request. I don't think that would have been an abuse of discretion, but that's not the situation that we have here.
But from a prejudice standpoint, if that amendment motion were denied, do you see any? I mean, so, because the defense would have preferred, right? Is that the amendment motion be denied? Would the state have been able to make its case with the honor about language, as the complaint was, assuming that the victim testified consistent with the statement she gave 2 weeks before trial?
Becker says the state would. When you address a sufficiency of the evidence, you look at the elements of the crime. And as long as she testified that the abuse occurred when she had not yet reached the age of 13, that would satisfy the elements of the statute.
Thank you.
I don't know if the court has any questions about the second issue. Certainly, that's a scale. The state's evidence, is it strong enough? That depends in large part on how strong how egregious the error was. This was not a testimony that was brought out by the state. It seemed to be unexpected to all the parties. So, given that,
I disagree that testimony would constitute bad act. Evidence of a bad act under 404B.
Would I dispute that it does?
Yeah.
The state argued that it was relationship evidence, that it could be relationship evidence. I'm not sure that I see it as relationship evidence. I'm not sure that it's, as the district court found, I see my time is up. May I finish answering?
Please.
Thank you. The district court noted that the statement was that he was possibly under the influence of drugs. We don't know what drugs. We don't know if this was a second story window, a third story window, a first story window. Is this horseplay, or is this something more than that? If it's horseplay, is that a bad act? I don't think that horseplay is a bad act.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. I'd ask to affirm.
Mr. Butler.
Thank you. If I could, I wanted to start with Chief Judge Siegel's question to counsel about, well, what if there were witnesses who could testify to such and such during the charge date range? Wouldn't that be prejudice from expanding the date range? Because in this case, there were. Page A2 of our addendum, defense counsel says, my witnesses, meaning defense witnesses, would be prepared to testify in the context of, quote, did she sleep over on or about June 1st, 2016? This is when he's explaining why the entire defense is premised around the date range. And when the amendment is granted, that blows those witnesses out of the water. It doesn't matter if she slept over on or about June 1st, 2016, like the state alleged. Suddenly, it could be any time between 2015 and 2016.
The original complaint was broader than just on. I mean, you're correct that the charge description does say on or about June 1st, 2016, but the date range for the offense is broader than that.
Sure, but
so, I'm not sure testimony focusing just on June 1st would be as, I don't know, just focusing on that date mm-hmm. would make or break the case.
Well, I don't know that it has to make or break the case, Your Honor. We're talking about prejudice, meaning
well, is
there...
Well, I thought you just said it would blow it out of the water or something.
I said it would blow June 1st. The amendment blew June 1st out of the water.
Yeah.
So if I... If I'm going to...
But that sort of implies that June 1st is the critical date.
The state... Well, that's what the state alleged. This idea that defense counsel should have realized that June 1st is a quote-unquote mistake... The defense counsel can only rely on the information charged in the complaint, which is, I agree, June 1st to August 31st. It doesn't say anything about before June 1st. And remember, the new allegation is that it happened during the school year, which is probably likely mostly before June 1st. And even the amended complaint itself doesn't say anything. Like the probable cause section of the amended complaint doesn't have this new statement in it, doesn't have any information in it that would explain why now the date range is September 2015 to September 2016. And that's what the, again, counsel, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but is accusing the defense lawyer here of lying to the judge when he says, I have 69 questions prepared for this witness about the date range. I've premised my entire defense around the date range. I guess you could question that as a strategy matter, but he's relying on what the government alleged.
But can I ask you, can we zoom out for a second? So am I wrong? The questions I was asking Mr. Magnuson, that if the court had denied the amendment,
mm-hmm.
and they had just proceeded as charged,
yep.
and the victim testified as she said in her statement,
yep.
How do we get around Becker if we're going to rule for you in terms of prejudice? I mean, if Becker says what it looks like it says,
yeah.
I understand that's a really broad reading of On or About, but
yeah.
but how do we rule for you without running into the people upstairs?
Because Becker is a sufficiency challenge, and this is not. You're presuming, Your Honor, that the jury would have found that this would have found, not could have found, but would have found, that these actions happened on or about June 1st to August 31st. We don't know that. Because defense counsel could get up there and say, what do you mean on or about June 1st? She said this happened during the school year. That could have been in the fall. That could have been in the spring. Her original statement was that it happened sometime between, quote, winter and summer. Winter. That's her original statement. Winter and summer. That's a reasonable doubt. And if you have a reasonable doubt, you might have a not guilty verdict, at least on one of the counts. And so I think it's really important to keep in mind when considering prejudice here, we're not looking at a jury verdict that says this happened June 1st to August 31st. If we were, I wouldn't be here. We're looking at the case as a whole. And how did defense counsel, again, how did he prepare the case? You know, the quote that counsel read from Gerdes, I think it is, and I'm sure that is an accurate quote. I don't know that in Gerdes we had a record of defense counsel explaining to the court exactly how this amendment blew up the defense he was going to present, like we do here. I don't know that I've ever seen that in any kind of these amendment cases. Usually it's a little more vague, like, oh, and now I have to think about new elements, or I might have a few more questions. Counsel said, to Judge Cochran's question about time, counsel said we don't know how much time. The defense counsel didn't ask for a specific time. That is not true. Page 8 of the addendum, counsel specifically tells the judge he'll need almost all of the following day to prepare for this, and he doesn't get it.
Thank you, Mr. Butler.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both, counsel, for your argument. We will issue an opinion in the statutory time frame now that we've taken under advisement. Thank you to student counsel for being here and for your work.
Very helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you.